Hello, grandkids, and welcome to Stunt Granny Audio 612. This is Kevin DeFrango. On the other end is Chris Calamito. What is up, good sir?
Not a heck of a lot, Kevin. How about yourself?
Oh, you know, there is more than enough wrestling on these days. Hey, even after a break, there's not a lot of top-tier subjects, I would say. So I will start with a simple question that I saw on Twitter. I don't know who, I can't remember who posed it, but they were mentioning the fact that if they just had to watch SmackDown currently of the main WWE shows, that it would be the WWE would be much more palatable. Would you agree with this comment?
Absolutely agree with that. Raw's terrible right now. If you said you didn't ever want to talk about Raw ever again, I could see an avenue for me not watching Raw.
Oh man,
I'm not enjoying the show.
Fair enough. Well, then I think it's more than good to maybe concentrate on the SmackDown, which.
Old SmackDown isn't a perfect show either by any stretch of the imagination, and we will get to probably the stuff that may have angered me the most was on SmackDown this week. Let's just start with that. I hate the Mysterio family. I hate these people. It started with me hating the storyline, but now that Seth's gone, I just hate the Mysterio family. I'm sick of them. Looking like they just stepped off of an Abercrombie and Fitch catalog cover. Just now they're interfering in Murphy's matches. Dominic can't even do a simple trip of the leg right, unless he's being carried through that. Aaliyah has no reason to be there. Ray's an idiot.
I still don't get I don't get why they're completely in with Murphy to the point of helping him cheat.
Why are they cheating? They're supposed to be the good guys. Why? I mean, this storyline is going to move on, and eventually Seth is going to return, and it's going to mean doom for the Mysterio family, I assume. And when that happens, I think we're supposed to feel sorry for them. But I will not feel sorry for them. If we go through with a wedding, if there was a real crowd of 10,000 or more people there, and Seth Rollins interrupted that segment... Road Warrior pop. I mean, it would just be... he'd be the biggest babyface in the entire business at that point.
The Mysterio family has definitely become extremely unlikable.
Yeah, I mean, you got Dominic walking around, all smug and self-satisfied like he owns the place after winning two matches. Aaliyah doesn't even have a job there, yet she's just allowed to waltz all over the place. and Ray is just such a putz as a father. it's just so bad, right? And this weekend was this past Friday was like the big turn in that. Just like,
oh,
why are they all here? Why are they all together? Why are they interfering in matches? I'm just like, the rematch on Friday, I'm rooting for Corbin. I hope he brings his family, and they kick some ass.
Oh, man. It's tough when you somehow end up making Baron Corbin look sympathetic. You are not doing a very good job.
It's actually kind of Yeah, it's actually kind of hilarious. It's like, we've marveled that, you know, Dominic's kind of a big kid, you know, but then it's just like Corbin walks in the room and you realize he's only tall. Dominic is only tall in comparison to his dad. Corbin just walks in the room and just towers over everyone, including Dominic, including Murphy. It's like, oh my god.
Yeah. Corbin is, for all of his flaws, he definitely does have that one trait that everyone loves to complain about, which is size. I mean, obviously he's not carrying the same weight that he did when he was an offensive lineman, but yeah, the guy, I want to say he's 6'5 or 6'6, something like that. I mean, yeah. Corbin is a very big gentleman. It wasn't something I thought about, and it does help that, you know, Seth Rollins, while he's not on short, he definitely isn't one of the taller superstars either. Yeah. I want to say he's 6 foot or 6'1".
Yeah,
so
the first thing you notice when Dominic starts showing up is that he's so much taller than his dad. Then you realize, then you put him up against someone on the curb, and you realize, yeah, that just makes him like 5'9", 5'10".
Oh, man. Yeah. That's something else. But yeah, they... I don't know how they solve that problem, because like this is another one where I don't know what they're going to do to make them likable, because it definitely seems to be leaning towards a wedding. Like, it has to be begged to be broken up. Like, has there been a wrestling wedding that hasn't been broken up?
I don't believe so.
So, yeah, I mean, it's, you know, I still don't see a good end coming to this thing.
Nah, there just can't be at this point. It's just, you know, for all the reasons we've been talking about for months now, about Aaliyah's age, the age difference, their lack of chemistry. And now we're compounding that, you know, Ray and Dominic have been gradually being more and more and more unlikable as time goes on. And then it's like, you start asking questions like, why is Aaliyah even being allowed to be there? Like, what does she doesn't do anything. She should be studying for her midterms while in between working shifts at Kohl's. Well, why is she here every week?
Because Daddy Dearest loves her.
I guess he did. Well, he didn't show her much love when this whole thing started. Just called her dumb right to her face on national television. Great job, Dave.
Well, and has he been one of the guys that they did the I blew my savings angle with also?
No, Ray. They've never done that with Ray. No, no, no.
Okay.
The infamous one with that was Shawn Michaels. And I think, and also I think Big Show, I think they did that with.
Oh yeah, they definitely did it with Big Show.
That's when he was crying on TV every week.
Oh man, yep. Not well. I don't know. Maybe that got Big Show his Netflix show.
Well, that's already gone too. So one season and done. Probably not the fault of anyone involved. COVID era economics more than anything else.
Oh, yeah. I don't know what it takes to be, because what were they claiming that as, the top watch show on Netflix that week?
I think it was like the top family show. I remember it was like it. Because Netflix this year started doing the actual ranking system of the top 10 shows or movies of any kind, and I think it peaked at like number 4.
Oh, okay.
When it came out, in the week it came out.
Gotcha. So, yeah, well, and I always, because I get a kick out of the ways that the WWE always frames how great their metrics are. Like, it's one of those ones where if you're paying close attention, it's basically gibberish what they're saying. But, yeah, I guess I'm a little bit surprised that it didn't at least do well enough that they wanted to keep it around. I don't know. I didn't ever see it, but I couldn't think that it'd take that much expense to make. So, yeah, to me, that's one of those ones was, does it need that many views to be profitable, I guess?
I mean, it was, once again, it was a very simple show in the same vein of, like, Disney Channel and Nickelodeon type shows like that. There's a home, there's the set at home, there's the set, the school setting, and then, you know, if one of the parents has a work setting, like, they use the performance center for some filming. It probably wasn't expensive, but, you know, it didn't make the cut.
Oh. Yeah. Okay, so that's the bad part of SmackDown.
Yeah.
The Tribal Chief stuff definitely is one of those, it's been great, like, just week in and week out, with, kind of the, I keep on being laughing at how many ways Roman Reigns can be disappointed in Jey Uso.
Yeah, that is all just so good. The Roman playing this Godfather type character is just, I you know, we've talked about what about you know the possibility of Roman as a heel for a very, very long time on this show. But I don't think we ever saw this kind of a character coming from him, or even this kind of a character in wrestling. It's really, it's pretty unique. I don't know if anyone's ever really played it like this.
But,
you know, he's just dead serious all the time. He is in control of everything. If things aren't in control, if things aren't in control, he still stays in control. He's, you know, he's doing the thing where the I guess we call it like the old Jake Roberts thing of, you know, everyone else is gonna yell, I'm gonna speak really softly. He never raises his voice. He speaks slowly and deliberately, and it really works for him. The only way it doesn't work for him is when they don't have the fake crowd noise synced right. And it's playing over him as he's trying to, you know, talk softly in the ring. That part is not good. They need to fix that part.
Oh,
if they're gonna do this like this.
Yeah, that shouldn't be hard to fix.
You think it wouldn't?
But yeah, it got by the censors. To start with, or the production staff to start with, so it at least enough times for people to notice. Because yeah, and I guess that is the other thing, that just in general, and I don't know if it's been because of the Roman Reigns storyline, but I will say that I think it's now 3 weeks running that I've actually just watched SmackDown live.
I would give that quite a bit of credit for that.
That is one of those things that I don't know how much I've watched anything live, especially SmackDown, because, you know, even with this episode of the podcast, like, we're recording on a Tuesday night, like, it's a ways off to watch SmackDown. It's like, sometimes it's easier to keep it fresh in your mind when you watch it like the day before or something. Or the day of recording. But yeah, it's been really fun to be watching it live. And Reigns and Jay, and even now, like, Kevin Owens hasn't had an interesting feud in a while at this point. Like, I feel like it's been quite some time.
Yeah, pretty much. He's been on the back burner since facing Seth at WrestleMania, really. He definitely has been. Granted, I think he voluntarily took some time off to be with his family and not be around WWE during the early stages of the pandemic, you know, after WrestleMania. But he's returned and just not really been focused on. They've used the Kevin Owens show to drive other people's storylines forward.
Oh.
But not really his until recently.
Yes.
But yeah, no. And what they kind of had a start of a new renewed focus on him a few weeks back, and for right now, look, it's definitely going to be the next opponent for Roman Reigns, and they did a very impactful close to the show to really set that off.
Yeah, and I mean, yeah, Kevin Owens is one of those guys that he always, almost from the jump within WWE, he really sets things off. And has really done, you know, taken them and gone with it. And, you know, he's kind of presenting a little bit of a different character too, at least for himself, where, you know, he has a little more of a, you can see that he has a little bit more of a point with criticizing Roman Reigns because he's using his own backstory to criticize Reigns.
Yeah, no, it's really good, and they have a lot of, you know, they have history between the two of them. They have Kevin Owens' character history that even when he's a heel, he is still presented as a family man. So they have a lot of places there that they can go. Yeah, I said he is the right next opponent for Roman Reigns, and also in all of this, they've also got Daniel Bryan set up to be the next opponent as well.
Yeah, and Daniel Bryan, is he still looking to... I'm trying to think here. Is he out of the... Or... Oh, yeah, he's still going to keep on chasing Sami Zayn for a little bit here.
No, I think they're done with that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they look like they were transitioning to Sami Zayn versus Big E.
And, oh, I forgot about that backstage segment.
Yeah. So Daniel Bryan is probably going to be, you know, intertwined with this whole thing. Yeah, you know, he's got reason to settle score with Jey Uso. They can do tag matches, you know, on SmackDown. They can get you. Reigns and Owens at TLC, Reigns and Bryan at Royal Rumble. Yeah, I don't know if I necessarily feel like, once again, there's the element of not feeling like Roman's in any jeopardy of losing the title anytime soon.
Oh, but
they've got good opponents set up for him and good stories going.
Well, and that's all you can... Yeah, that's what you need to ask for, I guess, or hope for when you have a dominant champion like Roman Reigns. Like, just build someone up interesting enough to, just to make the storyline believable, at least, without having to go completely weird, like they are with some other top storylines. Elsewhere on shows here. And I'm trying to look at... I think that's about it. I mean, does that really cover SmackDown? Because
we can talk a little about the women's stuff.
Yeah, we did... We got some Bianca versus Natalia going on. Not surprising that Bianca got a fairly easy win, but she also didn't get a big statement victory in the match.
No. It was a roll-up victory. Little hollow, but I'm sure they can do another match between them where she can get a more dominant win. And of course, you know, we have Bayley versus Bianca coming up, which really big match. Which you know, forget Natalya. Obviously, the Bayley match is more important for forget Natalya, unless she's doing weirdo stuff with her sister. Which I say weirdo stuff with her sister in the best way possible. online, but yeah, where was I now? Okay, yeah, Bianca and Bayley. Yes, I like that a lot. I think that's a great feud for Bianca to have, you know. But it kind of really starts her off, you know, really quick, maybe quicker than. But once again, obviously, we'll get into the complete mess that is the Raw Women's Division shortly, but. SmackDown has Bianca Belair right now. They've got her versus Bayley, and then they can do, you know, her versus Sasha, and then after that, I'm not sure where we go. But yeah. At least we've got we've got those things to look forward to.
I mean, you could put in what's her name? Carmella is in the main event picture with Sasha currently.
Yes.
I think she could be thrown in as a Bianca opponent at some point in between if they don't want to go straight to Sasha. But in general, though, I think what you're trying to get at, I agree with, which is the women's division is not really deep. Like, as much as a dominant win over Natalya would be nice, any win over Natalya just isn't that big at this point. Like, she's, you know, she is what she is at this point, you know?
But they also need Natalya to be the number two heel on SmackDown. Well, number three heel. We'll move Carmella up for at least a short-term thing. But she needs to at least be the number three heel of the women on SmackDown. So, yeah, I can see them trying to protect her a little bit, not have her do that big job right away. That's fine. Like I said, I like that they're... That's it. Bayley versus Bianca should be tremendous.
yeah, that should be quite enjoyable, and I'm still not terribly excited about the Carmella character.
No, and it seems like they are already, you know, falling out of love with it too. So I don't see Carmella beating Sasha.
I wouldn't have expected that even if I enjoyed the gimmick, to be honest with you. But, they don't seem to be putting much emphasis on it. And, I mean, I can understand wanting to change from the comedic Carmella to something else because she was running around with R-Truth so much. So I could see, you know, a little change in attitude might help perceive her a little bit different, but not a big fan of what she's doing currently, because I did feel like she was getting pretty decent at the wrestling end of things. I shouldn't even say getting decent, like, I thought she was having good matches after the I think it almost all happened after the title run. Like, I feel like the light bulb went off after her title run, which was kind of interesting that she hasn't really been back in the picture since then. But it also shows you the amount of faith the WWE has in someone not from the Four Horsewomen. You know, it's taken this long and this much to happen for her to kind of get one of those top tier shots. So,
right.
I guess you already alluded to it.
Yeah, let's talk about it. The dumpster fire that is the Raw Women's Division. Oh my god, this is terrible. Like, they are really damaging Asuka by intermingling her with all of this. They never should have put those women's tag titles on Shayna and Nia.
Yeah, they completely lost. Not that there was a lot of focus.
Because Shayna should have been an opponent. Shayna could be a singles opponent for Asuka as we speak. If we were doing this.
Yeah,
and they also could have done a thing, and they also could have gotten Nia out of the way too if they needed to, but before they got to Shayna.
Agreed. Yeah, because Nia could have been an opponent again. Like, I mean, she's kind of like, the Big Show in and of the fact that you pretty much insert her in any title picture, and you're like, okay, I get it, because she's so much larger than, you know, name your opponent here. I could have seen, given them the tag titles. And it's been kind of weird for as little as they've done for the women's tag division. They kind of concentrated on them bickering like almost more than any other women's tag team champions. Like, I don't even know if Bayley and Sasha got this much time, or like maybe they got an equal amount of time, but it's been that long in between women's tag champs getting any type of TV segments.
Right, yeah, no, this is... This whole thing is just... It's just some really bad match. Shayna Baszler is not built for tag team wrestling at all. That is just not her style.
Yeah.
So Shayna is... The knock on Shayna would be that she seems to be fairly one-dimensional in what she needs to thrive. She needs to be the bully heel, just putting, you know, her opponents in and out of holds, torturing them, making them fight back, and then, you know, and fight from underneath, being the underdog. But in tag team action, there's nothing there. Nia's as bad as ever. Lana's we've talked about Lana ad nauseum. This isn't helping. That ridiculous spot where Lana was out of... She was either too early or too late. I still can't figure it out. When Nia Jax just ran herself... Stopped and then ran herself through the ropes.
Oh, yeah. There were a lot of not good-looking spots during that match. And I guess... Yeah. I hadn't really thought about Shayna being that type of one-dimensional, but I think that's kind of nail-on-the-head material there. And it's kind of funny because, she hasn't been around long enough for it to get worn out. And it does help that, for the most part, she's had a laundry list of opponents that anyone would be envious of.
Yes, in NXT, and we can talk about, you know, the NXT role in all of this too, because the NXT and Triple H are just hoarding all those good women. It's absolutely ridiculous. I love the NXT women's division. It's probably my favorite thing in all of wrestling, but it shouldn't be this good. At least half of the women in this War Games on Sunday should be on the main roster by now. Ember Moon, who was on the main roster.
It's almost surprising that Toni Storm came back to NXT in some ways too. Like, she could have been someone that was tailor-made to just head on up to the main roster after fairly lengthy absence. I definitely understand enjoying NXT more for the performer's point of view. But yeah, like I don't know how you're not Vince in company up on the main roster going, "Phew, man, we are really screwing the pooch here."
Okay, with the exception of Raquel, who's still fairly green, but shows a lot of promise. Are
Yes.
any of the other women who are going to be in that War Games, which we're going to include Io Shirai? I know they're going to do the angle on Wednesday's show, but obviously, after what they did last week, Io Shirai is going to join Chassie Blackheart's team. Is there any? Okay, so of the seven remaining women that's taking out Raquel, is there any of them that wouldn't do well on the main roster at this point? Is there any of them who isn't better than Lana? Isn't better than isn't better than Nia? Isn't better than Lacey? Isn't hell even isn't better than Peyton Royce or whoever else? Or even throw a Nikki Cross and Alexa Bliss. Like, it's ridiculous how talented that NXT women's roster is. I'm not knocking some of those women. I am knocking a few of them too, though. Not all of them. They are really bad.
Yeah. 'Cause I don't know if Nikki Cross's problem is a presentation problem now. Like she can't do Psycho Killer, and she was doing okay as the bubbly sidekick, but now she's left in this weird spot where you should think that she'd at least be aggrieved, so you can't really have her be happy-go-lucky sidekick anymore. It's just like I don't, it's always one of those ones where you don't know what they said to creative, who's pitched what, and all that other good stuff, but there's got to be a better way to at least keep her on TV and keep her, even if she isn't, the challenger for a championship on whichever brand she's on, she should at least be positioned well enough to be a gatekeeper, I would think.
Yeah,
To
absolutely.
move along. So I mean, yeah, but yeah, Alexa Bliss, I mean, I thought she got a lot better in the ring, but they've also put absolutely no faith in her ring work for question mark reasons for at least 2 years now.
Yeah, no. I mean,
Like,
they removed her from the single stuff and put her in the tag team for a while, and that was going really well. Now she's showing off a different side of her with this stuff with Bray Wyatt, and she's good in it. So, and she's there to be eventually, put back into the women's division as a challenger. So that's all right. But I mean, there's only so many Lana and Nia Jax and Dana Brooke matches that I can take.
Yeah, as much as I will mention Dana Brooke and Kent State in the same sentence, I'd be cool with not really seeing a whole lot of her anymore. Like, she's another one where it just seems like having an athletic background, like sometimes you're like, oh, automatic plus, or gonna be a good to great superstar, and whew, she has not shown that at all.
No,
It really has not translated for
not at all.
her. So yeah, there are a lot of women, and like you said, all seven of the women outside of Raquel really could come up to the main roster and be better than a vast majority of them. Like, because,
Yes.
and that's the other thing. Like, I'm not even sure. I mean, do you think they could pull off a one last run gimmick with Natalya? Like, 'cause like I feel like she's even too far damaged at this point to really be salvaged beyond what she is at this point.
I think she is what she is at this point. I don't. Whenever the last time they put the women's title on her was probably the last run run she has in her. And they've put her in position to be a title contender in paper. She got SummerSlam last year against Becky Lynch, and you know, that ended up well, doing well enough.
Oh.
Yeah. So yeah. I guess she's someone you could plug in if you need to. But is that she is kind of what she is.
Yeah.
So it's a maintenance move to put her. It's a whole plugging move to put her in somewhere. To put her in a higher position.
Yeah.
Whereas if we finally get some NXT call ups going, those are moves that can actually pay dividends in the long run.
Now, I believe you had a tweet about the not Nia Jax, the Rhea Ripley segment there. Did you end up, was that on Chasing Glory?
Yes, it was.
Okay, because did you happen to listen to that? I did not.
I didn't really. I only watched that segment. I don't typically. I don't really want to. I don't really care for. Let's get together and have a good cry over our childhood, type podcast. I don't mean to be rude about that, but that's kind of what it is. Yeah. So. But yeah, no. It's just like. Once again, we talk about the shows that are actually good, but man, they're far from perfect too. They really. Did a number on a number of people, Rhea Ripley being one of them. That what happened from WrestleMania on is just absolutely ridiculous. And then you got the story. Watching that Liv Morgan documentary, it's just like her struggle story is literally battling WWE creative. It's like I don't even know how that gets made and put out for public consumption. It's literally telling people that your creative team sucks, and just right all the way to the top that that Vince's creative instincts suck.
Yeah, I did. Now, did you watch that one? Because I didn't watch that one either.
I have. I did watch that one. It's like once again, it starts with there's childhood. There's tough moments in a childhood, but nothing. Nothing too tragic or anything. Or, I mean, her story really gets started the night of the last, second to last, or however you want to put it, shake up before there was a draft, or however you want to put it. The one where they broke up the Riot Squad for no reason.
Oh, right. Okay.
And then it just goes you through this year where they do absolutely nothing with her. There's starts and stops. And then, she's just back with Ruby Riott again.
Oh, man. Yeah, I guess I saw some people making comments like that, but, getting an honest-to-God review is worth showtime for sure. I mean, I guess we've talked about it a lot to me. I feel like just in general about how, it just seems like such a hassle there in the WWE I understand that not everyone's going to knock it out of the park, but when you almost actively hinder your own performers, you just kind of scratch your head. So, and I'm trying to think, what did you think, and we kind of brought her up a little bit, it seemed like there was a little bit of dander raising that I seem to see online about the Randy Orton, Alexa Bliss stuff?
It's a way to go with it that Alexa Bliss is the Fiend's weakness. Once again, I have no idea who's supposed to be the face or who's supposed to be the heel here at all. It's all just this weird gray area. That part doesn't work, but at the same time, I don't hate the idea of them, other than the fact that Randy Orton and Bray Wyatt have never had a good match against each other, and I don't know if they're particularly going to start now.
Yeah, that infamous WrestleMania match is just gonna live on in, as I just should have said to start with, infamy.
Yeah, and we're not even gonna talk about the House of Horrors match.
Oh, hold on, was that the one that Randy Orton was wearing pants in the limo but shirtless, or was that another?
I think it was pants, was shirtless with pants. Yes.
Okay. Oh, I remember seeing that and remember how wacky that was. Yeah, they have not had... I mean, I guess it's kind of interesting. Their interplay on TV works out nicely because of all these feuds, but if you do actually go back and look at them, it does not make for a good look back at all.
No.
So, yeah, because I guess I didn't get the problem. When I kind of saw that, I'm like, huh? That's just, you know, it's something to give a vulnerability to the Fiend, which has been a little bit of a problem in my book in general with his booking. It's just like, how do you hurt the guy that doesn't feel pain and is impervious to even chair shots? Like, how's anyone ever going to beat that guy? So having some type of kryptonite, even if it is Alexa Bliss, is a nice little spot to work, I feel like. And I would assume that at some juncture she's not going to be as helpless as she acted on Monday night.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I feel like that story just needs to play out a little bit more. Drew McIntyre and Sheamus. Are we going to see a Sheamus? I mean, do you even call it a heel turn at this point?
I have no idea what you're going to call it, no. But yes, Sheamus, Sheamus is definitely eventually going to turn on Drew, but man, it's just becoming more and more apparent that quickie title change and change back was just such a mistake. Drew's lost a lot of momentum since then, and maybe losing to Roman Reigns too didn't help that either.
Yeah, I mean, they did as much as they could to cover up that loss, but it's still a loss, and any heel worth their salt is going to bring up that loss. So it kind of nullifies the hard work that you did in the ring. And I would think that that's not going to be the last time that someone brings up that loss.
Right.
And I mean, I do think that Drew did a good job of kind of answering for the loss himself. You know, he did kind of point out the obvious interference, without whining about it, really. Just saying, hey, you know what, whatever, next time, I'll get it done, I'll get the job done. So, you know, they're doing what they can to cover it up, but again, like, they're gonna pound it into the ground for, like, two, you know, the next two, three, probably, opponents that he has, and it's just like, well, what are you going to do now? Like, when you get 3 months of bad press after, you know, one good promo, that one good promo isn't going to help you out.
Yeah.
And although I would imagine that this is going to be another, you know, whoever Drew takes on, I would figure is just going to be, I guess Drew is taking on AJ Styles first. So, I mean, the Sheamus problem isn't going to be for a little bit, at least.
Yeah, no, I think the whole Drew Sheamus issue, it's good to play it out. for a little while longer. AJ Styles is obviously that guy you can plug in any spot in the card and he'll deliver. So that's all good. It's fine. It's nothing exciting. I was kind of hoping that, you know, we do the Sheamus turn on Monday and follow it up with Mrs. Money in the Bank cash in, just to inject some life into this show. You know, immediately, instead of trying to hold things off until, you know, after TLC or, you know, after the new year. Like, this show, because this show is dying.
Yeah. Laid out. And conversely with SmackDown, I have watched Raw pretty much on time at this point, but I also have zero qualms about my bedtime's trying to be around 10:30, so it's like, oh, okay, main event's coming up. Click, just stop where I'm at, and then I'm, you know, I go to bed. Like, it's the main event is never interesting enough for me to spend the time. And even with their biggest stars being in the main event,
yes, their biggest stars, The Miz and John Morrison.
Well.
Oh, and Sheamus for that matter. Even though I like what you're doing, it's just like, yeah, this whole thing's kind of a mess right now. Yeah, you know, Drew and AJ should have a good match at the pay-per-view, but I don't know if the TV getting us there for the next couple of weeks is going to be all that interesting either, though.
There's
for a
just
match, once again, we kind of know that Drew's going to win.
And there's not that much. They've got to build some type of friction, and they don't have a whole lot of time to build friction until the pay-per-view at this point.
Yeah.
And really, AJ Styles, even though he's kind of been on the heel side of things, like naming himself the captain and everything, he's been so entertaining that it's hard to dislike him. Even if you think he's coming off as a little bit of a, think a tool would be a good, good way to sum it up. You know.
Yeah. Well, tool doesn't even begin to describe someone who is absolutely completely unlikable. You know where I'm going with this? I hope. Riddle. Oh my God. That is just channel changing heat to use an insider term. My God, do I never want to hear that man speak ever again?
Yeah, that's one of those ones where I'm going to assume that someone has explained how Riddle uses bro to Vince McMahon. Somewhere between 3 and 12 dozen times, and this is still what we're getting. Like, they're, yeah, which is not good. Not good, Jim. Not good at all.
But at least they've accomplished getting people to stop talking about Riddle's off-screen problems instead talking about his on-screen problems.
Although there is definitely people, and I am one of them, that sometimes is still conflating the two things happening.
Yeah, it just shows that even if none of that had happened, they were still gonna fuck him up anyway.
Oh,
they were just gonna overplay the stoner angle. The dumb stoner angle. They were going to overplay him. The fact that he wrestles barefoot, which I actually no. I did not think that his first 6 to 8 weeks on the main roster was going to be them talking about his feet. I actually did not think that they were going to do that, but lo and behold, they did that. So at least they've stopped that too. But now he is just this complete idiot stoner. Not a cool, calm, you know, collected, you know, always zen stoner like RVD. You know, the really, really, really annoying dumb stoner that you can't, that you just hate it when you get trapped in a conversation with him at a party or at the bar or what have you.
Yeah, which is not a good place to be trapped at all.
No, it's just like, and you're, it's like I said, you're watching MVP have to be stuck in a conversation with Riddle, and it's like you're remembering back to those moments where you have been stuck with people like this, and you're feeling sorry for MVP. This should not be the goal here.
Oh no, it should not be. We should be feeling unsympathetic for one MVP, but. They have done a continuously great job of making him feel sympathetic, because that's another part of the train wreck of Raw that I almost forgot about.
Yeah, is Cedric Alexander leaving the Hurt Business? Did I miss something? Did I miss a few weeks?
I don't think so. They seem to have him slotted, him and Shelton Benjamin slotted in for the team.
But you got him call. You got him saying that he's better than Shelton. Or did he call Shelton old at one point? Or just blamed him for the loss last week? And it's just like you have a great thing with these four together. Why are we messing with it already? There is no future for Cedric Alexander away from the Hurt Business, at least in the immediate future. Why are we doing this?
Then, if there would have been a time to play this card, it would have been right after Shelton Benjamin gave him the don't do anything stupid talk. But they didn't. Like, to have Cedric Alexander question his loyalty to the Hurt Business, like, this seems like an angle that should have been played out, pretty much right away when he jumped in there.
Yeah.
And it wasn't, so it's kind of a weird spot to be in.
Yeah, no, that's such a good thing going. Why are we... I don't like this whole... Lashley jumping on Riddle, because now we got the thought that maybe, oh God, is Riddle gonna end up with the U.S. title? Oh,
it is entirely possible that that happens.
Yeah, a very, very bad move. I think that goes without saying.
As well as MVP has framed Bobby Lashley, like, they still haven't, the WWE, to me, still hasn't put that much faith in him. Like, having a couple of wins isn't a lot of faith to me. Because I feel like he's defended the title. Oh, he beat Sami Zayn, which isn't really saying a whole lot, especially since, that was kind of a weird heel versus heel thing. And I'm trying to think of who... Oh, did he beat Apollo Crews? And, like, who else has he beat to defend that belt? Like, I mean, that's how bad it is for me. Like, I don't really... MVP has talked a great game for that group, but it still hasn't really delivered on TV.
Yeah, with... Lashley as the cornerstone. He has not really had a strong U.S. title feud since then. And he already had a shot against Drew and lost, so I don't know. I don't know if there's really much meat on the bone there. Yeah, and once again, it sounds like they're already in the process of breaking them up, which that's a really, really dumb, bad move, because there's a lot of potential in this group staying together.
Sure.
And I don't get it.
Another one that, oh man. I'm gonna go with a lazy design alert. The Retribution flag motif that they just added to their gear. Man. Just pure laziness, man. I'm pretty sure that that 99% looks like the at least an old version of the New England Revolution, which is a Major League Soccer team, which happens to be in the backyard of Stamford, Connecticut. It looks like one of their logos, which is not good. And it just is super lazy to me. Like, I'm not quite sure why there's a flag on it to start with. But hey, I guess I should be happy that, Retribution got a much needed win over Ricochet? Question mark, laughy face, couple Yay. Other things.
Yay. You beat Ricochet. Yeah, there's just nothing left here. I'll yeah. Cut all the flower. Cut all the dramatic, you know, promos he wants. Using all his big words, and it's nothing. It's not really a knock on Ali. This is just done on a rival, and he's a smart guy, so he knows it too.
No. Yeah.
Yeah. There's nothing to this, and then you have Reckoning lose to. Dana Brooke.
Oh.
That was just a dumb move. It looks like they're already going to set them to move her out of there, which is, you know what, that's fine. Salvage as much of these people as humanly possible. you know, start calling her Mia Yim again.
Oh, right.
That's all fine. Let's just wrap this up soon. Let's just throw this in the bad idea pile and hope that they can salvage the individuals. And it's not hard because, you know, three of them are wearing, you know, masks to hide their identity. Mia Yim's mask never hit anything.
No, it really did not hide a whole lot. The fact that I guess I was a little bit surprised that she took it off to wrestle, but I'm like, whatever, man. Just... It is what it is at this point. Oh, man. Well, speaking about getting out of here, are you ready to get out of here? I feel like we've done up SmackDown and Raw here.
I'm absolutely ready to get up out of here.
Okie dokie. Well, unless things change, you will hear from us... sometime later in the week, talking some AEW and some NXT. For a multitude of reasons, but we will leave it at that. Beer of the show for this evening. Still hauling through some old beers. This is one brought to me from the Colorado area. Wiley Roots Brewing Company. Raspberry Lemonade Slush. Sour ale with raspberry and lemon. It is delicious. At 4.6% alcohol. Considering that I should have finished drinking these a couple of months ago, it still tastes pretty good. Don't really keep your beers around this long, kids, unless they're dark beers. Then you can keep them around as long as you want. So that is from @DeFrango11. My partner in crime is @StuntCali. The brand is @StuntGranny. Rate and review us wherever you happen to download this fine podcast, which is pretty much all of the platforms. So have a good night.
Later.